As soon as you're ready.
You're good to
okay.
go.
Okay. Morning, everyone. The Senate E-12 Budget Division will come to order. Today's Wednesday, January 28, 2015. Today, we're going to have an update on what has been shared with the public yesterday by the governor on the proposed budget for the state of Minnesota, and we'll focus on the education budget. Commissioner Casselius will go through that. We also will hear testimony from the Academies for the Blind and Deaf, Brad Harper, and also the Perpich Center for Arts Education, and we have a few testifiers. They'll be testifying in approximately an hour or so. We do have a green budget book. Now, this is a few hundred pages. We just have limited quantity now, but everything will be online, and we'll be distributing more information as needed. For questions, and I'm sure there will be many, we're going to hold on any questions until after the Commissioner Casselius has given her presentation. And as you all know, we will be focusing over the next 100 days on this subject. There'll be a lot of follow-up bills and discussion, and so there'll be ample time to delve into any number of questions that you have. But first, we're going to get the overview, and we welcome Commissioner Brenda Casselius. Welcome back to our committee.
Thank you, Chairman, Senator Wieger, members. So glad to be here this morning to talk with you about the governor's budget. As you can imagine, I'm fairly excited about the budget and have a lot to talk to you about how this budget really focuses on our kids who are struggling the most, but also really helps school districts in terms of keeping on the lights, running the buses, and doing the good work that they do within their classrooms and supporting our great teachers. So we'll go ahead and get started, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
I'll try to be brief with my comments so that we can answer questions as well. So we'll move along briefly. So why don't we go ahead? As you know, the department mission is to lead for educational equity every day for everyone. And we are working together to set policy that directs school districts and aligns our state goals around our work together, and also to focus on where we're headed in the next 4 years. So we're hoping that this budget is part of an overall four-year agenda in order to move the achievement gap and close the achievement gaps. So I'm going to get my PowerPoint notes here as well. Give me just one moment. Do you have it on staple? I got it. So in Minnesota, we have about 850,000 students in our public schools, K through 12. Of course, with the addition of preschool, that would add an additional 31,000 students that we're anticipating. We have about 155,000 children currently participating in several different types of early learning experiences like ECFE or Head Start currently, either federally funded or state funded. We have about 53,000 licensed school teachers and 332 school districts, 148 charter schools, and over 65,000 adult learners. We also have about 15,000 students who choose homeschool and about 45,000 students who are in those 148 charter schools. As you know, we've been focused on the world's best workforce goals that we put in place in 2013, but really these are just common sense goals that we know research shows us works for improving the achievement of children. So one is really to get children ready for school, and you'll see all of these reflected in our budget today. Having third graders read on grade level and reading well so that they then can do well the rest of their K-12 career or careers beyond third grade. To close the racial and economic achievement gaps between students while still raising the boat of all students. And having students ready for college or career, as well as graduating on time and ready for college so that you don't need remedial education. So those are our main primary goals that we've had.
And so Commissioner, we would add that they're the legislature's goals, too. They're in statute.
That's right.
So we're in partnership on that, and we do have actually measurable outcomes and seeing how we're doing, so we appreciate your focus.
Absolutely, and we'll be reporting those out as the agency as well and how well we're doing. That's why you see this budget reflecting those world's best workforce goals that the legislature put in place in 2013, because we're holding ourselves accountable for that work and trying to align to what the legislature has set as priorities for the state so that our work reflects the work that's in the schools and can be aligned and support the schools in doing and meeting those goals. So from 2003 to present, our funding has lagged behind inflation. That's no surprise to anyone. We are at about the same rates when adjusted for inflation at 2003 for our state aid and general ed formulas. We still have some work to do. So you'll see in our recommendations some additions to the per pupil to increase that and kind of help with that. From 2003 to 13, our funding disparity, however, has closed. Not closed solely, but has narrowed, let me say it that way. So we've gone from our highest revenue earning districts, top 5% of highest revenue earning districts, to our lowest 5% of revenue earning districts, from 31% high to 18.5 by 2016. So we've been able to close the disparity so that zip code doesn't matter so much. We've done that through providing small schools revenue, through our local optional aids that we've provided, so that we could create better equity among districts in terms of
Commissioner
resources.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't know if we were just to ask questions as we go or.
Senator Stumpf, we're going to wait until her presentation is over.
Go through my presentation quickly because I think that most of you are familiar now with the budget documents, and so I'll try to go through those quickly so that we can get to your questions and have a rich discussion.
And the focus perhaps on the change in big picture items. So thank you.
So then also I just wanted to point out that also property taxes grew, but from 2011 to 2014, the property taxes only grew 1%. So we're pretty proud of the fact that we're trying to hold steady our property taxes, increase state aids to schools, and create better equity among schools so that zip code doesn't matter so much. And, of course, you all know we did pay back the school shift. So we're in pretty good stable ground. I say that we've somewhat righted the ship. But there's still a lot more work to get schools the resources that they need to meet the really high expectations that we have for them in regard to their pre-pupil funding and the annual increases in teacher salaries and that kind of thing to keep up with the costs and the inflationary costs. I just wanted to give you a slide here so that you could see the funding disparities, how we were at a high of 37% back in 1992, now going down to 18.5%, which are with our highest and lowest revenue earning districts. Also, I have a slide in there about strata just to show you kind of the equity here and how this has worked from 2011 to 2016 in terms of the changes in the ADM. You can look at this further. So that you can see our non-MET districts greater than 2,000 and our non-MET districts that are lower than 1,000 having a significantly higher increase than metro or charter schools. So what are our main goals and why did we prioritize the budget the way that we did, the governor? Did, and that is because we are really trying to focus on our kids who are struggling the most. We are really trying to focus on closing those achievement gaps. We've talked too long about those achievement gaps, and we've set an aggressive goal to close achievement gaps by 50% by 2017. It is an urgent matter. 2017 is coming up. Even though our schools are showing some progress and you have in your packets some information about where we're at with the progress in that gap closure and where our districts are and where our schools are in meeting those targets, and we're making good progress, but we have to put the accelerator on and provide the kind of supports to schools so that they can focus on those students who are the most vulnerable. And then we've made an ambitious goal as well to increase our graduation rate by 2020 to 90%. And with no student group less than 85%, That is a very ambitious goal. We're hoping to be able to meet that target, but we still need to provide additional supports to our schools, our high schools, so that they can have the kind of resources they need in order to do that. This is so important because the demographics of our state are rapidly changing. If you look at the slope of the line on here, regardless of the years underneath, you can see that this slope is going up, and we just can't, as a state, continue to leave 50% of our students behind. We have to, in our own economic interest, be sure that every child has the opportunity for an excellent education, because that's their best opportunity out of poverty. And we have growing poverty as well. Matter of fact, a really alarming statistic for the nation is, for the first time in the nation's schools, we're over 50% of students who are living in poverty in our nation's public schools. And that ought to be a wake up and a call to action for all of us. And it's about 38% for Minnesota. So our funding for the future, let me dive right into it. We are proposing a 1-to-1 increase each of the year of the biennium. This is $174 million. It is about a $58 per pupil increase overall, and raises the per pupil from $5,831 to $5,948. Also, we are recommending early childhood education that the governor has stated that he would like to see, and by 2018, all 3- and 4-year-olds in Minnesota have access to high-quality, affordable early childhood. As you know, this has been a priority of his since 2011, and he has been a staunch advocate for early childhood, realizing the benefits to a children have all of our children having a great start. So how do we propose to do that? I know and commend the Senate for their bill to be able to offer free all-day pre-K for children. And I saw that, you know, that had a larger price tag on it because you started right away next year. We, in our plan, are saying let's give schools a year to plan. Some schools have facilities to be able to do this. Some schools don't. Some schools already have full all-day pre-K programs running. Some schools don't. Some schools have half-day running. Some are partnering with their local Head Start. So there's many different ways that schools are engaging in the preschool readiness. But more schools are engaging now because in our World's Best Workforce Plan, it is a goal. It is the number one goal for our districts now, that they are responsible ensuring that children are coming to them ready for kindergarten. And so we're investing $109 million to pay for a 0.5 pupil weight with a school match. It's voluntary for schools, optional for families, flexible for schools to partner with their local Head Start or other parent-aware quality-rated programs, and that we are recommending that we repurpose our school readiness money and use that in order to create an efficiency, because most of that money is already used for pre-K. So if the schools are going to get a pre-K, you don't need to get two pots of pre-K money. So we'd combine those dollars and put them into one pre-K 4-year-old budget in this proposal. We also are, for early learning scholarships, proposing to expand the parent choice learning scholarships. Before, we had Pathway 1 scholarships that went to parent choice, about half of the scholarships. Then we had the other half called Pathway 2 that went to schools because we didn't have a 4-year-old pre-K public school option. So half of those, the 28 million, went to schools or center-based or Head Start. And so what we are recommending is that we expand those to 0 to 5, birth to 5, allowing parents to start earlier, because, of course, the research comes back that the earlier the start, the better. And these are targeted scholarships for poverty. And so we felt that if we allowed them to go to 0 to 5, that would be a good change to that, as well as help the market, because it's more expensive to take care of babies. So if they get the help with the babies, then they could have more 4- and 5-year-olds in their home care centers. So this would be, make for 45 flexible scholarships to 9,000 scholarships. Now, if we do raise the cap, then that would mean that we wouldn't have as many scholarships to offer if we raise the cap. So that just understanding that. Also, with the birth to three, if we go to birth to three, understand that the way that the scholarships were built was that if you get a scholarship, then you're eligible to continue with your scholarship. So that would also impact the availability of scholarships in the future, and their sibling preference on that as well. Going on, we also cut the Head Start waiting list and tried to eliminate that with a $19.4 million investment. That's 2,485 children who have been waiting for Head Start. They've been income eligible, but there just hasn't been the spots. And so this is, like, super important because these are our poorest families, and they provide parenting and classes and support to families, and it's just a wonderful program. I think most of you know I'm a Head Start baby myself, and can absolutely attest to the values of Head Start instilling within me a love for learning and just a passion for wanting to grow and be healthy. So I'm a huge Head Start advocate. Help Me Grow is a program that just about everybody loves. It's a way to connect parents to resources, help resources get to parents. And so we're wanting to continue that support in our Help Me Grow program. That's $2 million. Other investments, just in other, so you can see a comprehensive kind of package here and what the governor's thinking about in terms of early childhood. These are not in the ed budget, but I wanted to just mention them. $17.5 million for the CCAP waiting list to eliminate the CCAP waiting list. Also in the DHS budget is home visiting. Child independent care tax credit is $99 million for families who maybe aren't income eligible for child care assistance at Head Start level or at the CCAP level or at the scholarship level. They'd be able to take a child care dependent tax credit. And also just want to mention, last year we provided additional revenue to ECFE with inflationary costs, so there will be some increases to ECFE as well. Reading Well by Third Grade is something we've been put in place, a bipartisan proposal back in 2011 that we're very proud of, and we've moved our needle on fourth grade reading on our NAEP from 24th in the nation to 10th in the nation in reading. And we're hoping now kids are taking the NAEP this year again that we'll continue to see progress. We also saw achievement gaps close between white and black students on our fourth grade reading, 10 points. So we think that this Reading Well by Third Grade is actually working for us and helping us. There's incentive aid that will continue, that we're proposing to continue, as well as then an increase in the Reading Core partnership that we've been able to do for the past several years by $10 million. That will give us 14,000 more tutors in our schools. We've also worked with Reading Core on professional development and also prioritizing which schools they go into so that they are really targeting their services and prioritizing the schools and kids that need it the most. Of course, we've been also working with our waiver to develop a statewide system of support for our priority and focus schools that are schools that struggle the most. We came to this body in 2013 asking for more funding for regional centers of excellence. I think you may have already had a presentation on regional centers of excellence. If you haven't yet, we'll be glad to do that. Was it in the House or the Senate? The House had one, and just really excellent teachers and school leaders working alongside schools, not a top-down heavy approach saying this is what you have to do, but really a collaborative, supportive model that helps share best practices across schools and across the state. And so we're really excited about that. We're asking for $6 million in this budget. Hope to get more if there's more in the supplemental budget. To allow more schools to be supported. This $6 million would allow for 200 more struggling schools to get the kind of support that they need. About 85% of them are seeing greater gap closure and student growth, and so we know that this strategy is working in our schools, and we've heard from our schools that it's been very beneficial. 52 schools have come off the list because of this support. Success for the Future is dollars to support our American Indian students. And we're asking for $4.5 million. There's about 32 eligible schools, Title VII schools right now that receive the funding. We have 66 eligible schools. And we just want this program to go out to those 66 schools, and then we'll work with technical assistance to support those schools through our American Indian Education Office, because we don't believe that this should be dollars that are dependent on whether an adult in the district can write a good grant or not. We want to be able to get this money out to the kids that need it the most, and help school districts help improve the conditions and the cultural and language supports that they give for American Indian children. This is a top priority for us to be able to support American Indian students. School breakfast, as you know, the governor supported school lunch over the past several years, and free breakfast for kindergartens. This is an expansion of school breakfast from pre-K through third grade for our youngest learners, so that they don't have to worry about hungry tummies when they come. And as you know, as we have growing poverty, we have growing food insecurity. And so we want to be sure that kids are well-fed and not going to the nurse because their tummy hurts because they're hungry. So we're recommending $28 million for students to be able to have free breakfast. We think this will impact about 83,000 students. The English Language Learner Program. We have passed a huge legislation last year in the LEAPS legislation, which is commendable, but we need resources to implement it, both at the agency and also within our schools. For many years, I've come to this body and asked for the 7 years of support for EL students, and we went from 5 to 6, but I believe because of the high standards that we're setting for our kids, because of the focus on concurrent enrollment and getting kids in more AP and IB coursework, that students who are English language learners may be proficient in English, but may also need additional support if they're going to move into rigorous coursework, similar to the kind of support we would give through our AVID program. We're hoping that our English language learners would be provided additional support in order to take more rigorous course taking and early college courses in high school. Positive behavior interventions. Many of you have heard about the disproportionality of our suspension rates in schools, that Black and Hispanic students, Indian students, students with disabilities are suspended at a greater rate than white students are, as well as just students having significant mental health issues, all races, all economic backgrounds, and difficulties with controlling behavior. We think our pre-K work is going to really help with some of that to help them get socially and emotionally adjusted for school. But also, positive behavior intervention systems is a proven system nationwide. We've implemented it in our schools. We currently have it in 478 schools. We'd like to expand to 600 more schools and give them the kind of support they need in order to be able to bring down suspensions, help students stay in the classroom, and provide the tools to teachers so that they can manage behavior in the classroom. So this is a very important ask, and we believe it's very supportive of students who are struggling with their behavior in school. We also are proposing, because the grant will be ending for the Promised Neighborhoods soon, and we know that that work is in its early stages of showing some significant progress for the Northside Achievement Zone and the St. Paul Promise neighborhoods, and we'd like to see that continue to work and continue to see our investment in those two neighborhoods, which are significantly stressed and high poverty neighborhoods. So all in all, you see a $375 million total over the biennium. There's funding for the future through the one general education investment, better early childhood education across the state, a comprehensive approach that invests in CCAP waiting lists. It invests in closing the Head Start waiting list. It invests in public school choice so we can expand choices for parents who want to go to their local public school. It expands early learning scholarships in the Pathway 1 category, so there's more parent choice on those scholarships. And it also invests in supporting parents through Help Me Grow. We continue our support with Reading Well by third grade. We continue our statewide support to schools for schools that are struggling to improve. We continue to support schools who are struggling with behavior and suspension rates, Success for the Future for American Indian Kids, free school breakfast, English language learners, and our our neighborhoods that are have high poverty concentrations, who have already started good work of empowerment and empowering the community to make a difference. So as you can see, this budget builds on our kids who are our poorest kids, our kids who are our most vulnerable, and exactly where we're trying to provide the supports that are research-based, that have demonstrated results, that build on the successes from what we've seen over the past 4 years and accelerate the learning of the children who are stuck in that achievement gap and provide the kind of supports to schools and teachers that need it most. I'd be happy to entertain any questions that you may have.
Yes, thank you very much, Commissioner. And, you know, we've set the high goal of world's best workforce, close the achievement gap. These recommendations are like a laser focus on those. And we'll open it up now for questions. And Senator Stump had his hand up first. And I believe Senator Pratt did submit an email with a question. And if that hasn't been asked, we'll go to you following Senator Stump, then Senator Torres Ray. We'll take questions till about 9:45 or comments. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Commissioner. It seems like each budget year that we have, or every budget year that we have some really, I think this is true with all of us, high expectations and hope of passing programs that we think will have a long-term benefit to the state and move that marker forward. And it certainly looks like the governor has done the same thing with the early childhood and the kind of the areas where I think we can make the most impact. But I do want to ask a question about actually two parts to it. One is one area, and I was trying to search for the article again, and somehow things disappear on my desk. If I set it down, they just kind of disappear. But Ken Peichel from the University of Minnesota wrote an article about he wrote an article here just recently about what he felt would close that achievement gap as no other program that we've tried could close it. And he thought what the problem was, and I have seen this over the years, is that we students that are not really catching on and doing well quite often are the students that, first of all, they get off to a bad start or a slow start. And yesterday I met with some people who were parents who are very concerned about dyslexia. So I'm wondering about how the budget addresses some of those areas that we've always kind of zeroed in on counselors, but I think it goes beyond that. I think we need to kind of get at the reason why some of these young boys and girls don't keep up with their peers. And I think some of it is related to, maybe a health issue like dyslexia, or it could be some kind of mental health issue. Obviously, the ones that we see quite often are, where there's a lot of turmoil in the families, or in the case of, I think, a number of our Native American friends, where there's a constant kind of a moving around in some cases, like those issues we haven't really, kind of zeroed in on. And I really think that Ken has something there. And then by the time they get a few years down the road, each year they're losing more and more ground.
Yeah.
And so by the time they get into, you know, the latter years of elementary school and first years of high school, they're ready to leave. There's no catching up for them. And so I think the early intervention is very important, but I think we have to be sure that the intervention is targeted to what their needs might be.
Commissioner.
Senator Stump, I agree. It's a very complex issue, and many reasons why children are caught in this underachievement, and many times it's because they didn't get a good first start. Sometimes it's housing and mobility. Sometimes it's family circumstance where there's mental health issues or chemical dependency issues or abuse issues, as we know, and this is a huge concern of the governor's around the maltreatment of children, and I know that Commissioner Justin is working on some of that reform currently. We've doubled our mental health grants to schools in the last session, so we are doing some work there. I think Cindy has some stuff in her budget right now about mental health supports earlier. Our home visiting program that we're doing through the Department of Health is another way to provide supports to families. Cutting the Head Start wait list is another way to support families and to support parenting. And, you know, sometimes there's attachment issues early on with children. And so any of that stuff, the work with the ECFE and providing the parenting support to families. So there's all of this work outside of the K-12 system that we also need to pay attention to in terms of supporting kids. And, you know, Ken Pakel works for the Search Institute, which looks at developmental assets and community assets and family assets and assets within the school community that are all need to be in place for healthy child development, not just the academic piece, but the overall healthy child development, and that impacts your learning. That's why you see the governor also proposing things like school breakfast, you know, and dental care in the DHS budget. I mean, these are all things, you know, you think dental care, why would that be important? Well, when children have a beautiful smile, it affects their confidence, you know. And so simple things like that, or simple things like not getting your hand stamped when you go in a line, you know, all of these things impact a child's self-confidence and self-efficacy at the in school. So it can be quite complicated, and what you see proposed here are things that would allow for schools to work very creatively within their dollars. We also have a program on the books called compensatory funding. Obviously, you're very aware of compensatory funding. That funding is used for, it's basically aid to, that is goes to schools to help mitigate some of the difficulties of being and living in poverty, and schools get to choose how they use that money, whether it's additional counselors, social workers, and that on top of what we'll provide in the additional revenues to the per pupil in the general ed formula. Schools also in 2011, we gave flexibility to move different pots of money, so school boards have the ability to move among pots of different dollars, and maybe Tom could speak to a little bit more of that flexibility that they have. But in 2011, we provided school boards more flexibility. All they had to do was have a reason to move that money from one pot to another pot for, to improve student achievement. So I'm hoping that school districts will use the tools in their, within their local control in order to focus on those kids who need it most and really impact those things that make a difference for children.
Great. Thank you. And the first go-around on questions, we'll have one question and for each person just so everyone can hopefully have a chance to share some initial items. On the dyslexia issue, Senator Stump, I know there's a number of parent advocates and others expressing ideas, and we're going to devote a hearing to that on February 25. So, good. Senator Pratt, you had an email, but if you'd like to...
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some other questions, but I'll take this one up and hopefully get back in line.
You can pick whichever you'd like.
And Commissioner, I sent an email yesterday talking about the IT certification program that was passed in 2014. Legislature appropriated $300,000 to implement it. And I've got to say, I was very impressed with your department's response yesterday to me and bringing me up to speed. For those that don't know, Senator Jensen authored a bill last time to help promote IT certification within the high schools. And I can tell you, as a hiring manager, I have a hard time finding people, college graduates, with the skills that I need in some of these areas. And we're not getting kids in high school interested or knowing that these are the skills that they need in order to be successful as part of the world's greatest workforce. The department set on an RFP. They determined that none of the respondents was qualified, and I found that shocking in a lot of ways. And so the department's going to get me some information on why those respondents failed, so that either Senator Jensen and I can work on modifying the bill to make sure that we're not excluding something inadvertently on the legislative side, or at least try to address the review side to make sure that we are moving forward with this. And I'll leave it open for comment with that, but I would thank you for the response yesterday, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you, Senator, and thank you for working with my staff, and we'd be glad to get you that information. But you did a great job of explaining it.
Okay, we'll note the follow-up on that, and Senator Jensen has been the chief author, and of course
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Know about that. We'll go to Senator Jensen, then Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator Bonoff. Okay.
My questions were in regards to this situation with the IT Academy bill that was passed last year, and my trying to understand and get a better idea. So I need some help from the department, because I will need to, in some way, figure out how to either write additional legislation to help with the process and to make sure that the appropriation that we did last year stays within the department so that we continue the work that we started. I know that even when the broadband came before this body, this committee, they talked about it and the importance of understanding how important technology will be for these students. And with your testimony today, looking at the numbers, $174 million, $109 million, $19 million, these are big dollar amounts. Our bill last year, it's law, it was $300,000. So not only understanding the RFP process, but understanding where the Department of Education is at when it comes to the technology and the career tech, because we know from your slide, the workforce, you know, creating the world's best workforce, the technology has to become part of that, and I think the legislature is moving in that direction. I just want to understand where the Department of Education is when it comes to that, so that I can get some legislation prepared for this year so that we can move this forward.
Thanks, Senator Jensen. Technology is obviously very, very important to the department and to our schools. I think it's even covered in our facilities workforce group recommendations, you know, talking about technology broadband, looking at how do we improve infrastructure, especially in rural Minnesota. So those are very important. And then our career technology program and our secondary success department working with Minsky system around these career pathways in high school 11 to 12. So lots of good ideas floating out there. We've had several summits across the state over the past year and a half. In tandem with Minsky system, talking about how do we build these career pathways for students, including IT areas, health areas, Project Lead the Way in engineering. So different ways that we can continue to support. So we'd be glad to get you information on what happened with this particular project and why the respondents that we had didn't meet up to the expectations of what we believe was in legislation and was of high quality and would provide a good learning experience for children.
Thank you. We'll note the follow-up and take action as needed. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I really applaud your effort to bring these issues forward and to put some you know, real dollars into issues that we really need to address. So I really appreciate that and appreciate the governor's direction. There are a couple of issues that I'd like to ask you. One is that as we grew some of the accounts and provided some revenue for certain things, things have become a little chaotic at the district level. So early childhood is an example of how we now are talking about what are we going to do with the scholarships? Is the money that if we implement pre-K, are we going to use the money for four-year-olds for early? And who are we going to target? And who is in charge? And how are we connecting with the CCAP families that are very low income? And they said, the teachers are saying, well, target the dollars, don't go pre-K, people are saying, well, of course go pre-K because that, you know, helps the most disadvantaged. It provides transportation. So we're bombarded with a lot of questions about what is the best option. And I do not see from the department, this is why we need to move in this direction and this is where we need to go. I proposed legislation for consolidating early childhood programs last year. I'm going to bring that legislation back because I believe that we need to create structures by which we track the funding that we provide and what are the outcomes that we get out of those investments. And I would like to know what are you doing in terms of doing that, because that was the reason you brought Mr. Carter to the department to help us figure out what is the long-term picture for helping those structures come together. The same is true for ELL. You are asking us to increase an investment. We increased last year. Yeah. I'm having meetings in my own district where $127 million is provided to the district by ELL students. There are 11 schools that are the worst schools in my district, and 51% of those children are ELL. So now you're asking me to support you in increasing ELL dollars for schools that are the worst schools in my district. So I have a group of predominantly immigrant parents who are telling me that I cannot support this because it is outrageous that the worst schools that receive significant funding are the worst schools in my district, and I have to attend to that. And so I am curious as to what is the proposal that comes behind this investment that really helps us do better in the long term. And the final thing is teachers. I don't see anything. The number one factor that really helps us understand and improve academic outcomes for kids are teachers. And there is nothing in this proposal. We have a task force that work on evaluation on QCOMP. They submitted some recommendations about really revamping the way we train, induct teachers, and evaluate and put them together. The cost of that is $250 million to do it. That is very significant. Without good teachers and without creating a significant structure to work with teachers, we're not going to get there. So I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
Commissioner and Torres Ray, I think you asked about three questions there.
You have to do that, Senator.
So if you can either solidify it or else choose one of the...
Thanks, Senator Johnson. So let me start with the... I wouldn't say it's the easier one, but I don't have a good answer for it, so I'll go ahead and start with it. But teacher workforce is something we've been working on, and I know is a passion of yours. We've met several times on teacher workforce. We do have some proposals that we work through the P20. I think you'll have a hearing on that, and looking at how can we build the teacher workforce. There's some suggestions around tuition reimbursement. There's suggestions around the QCOMP task force that came together. Those recommendations will be brought forth as well. They're not in this proposal because we are just now getting the recommendations from the groups. So we hope that you will continue to discuss and look at those as priorities in this body. We know that there is a teacher supply problem. We have to do something as a state to build the pool of high-quality candidates for teachers. And so that is of urgent matter, so we still need to address that, hopefully, and continue to talk about it. So I'm anxious to see and talk and discuss about those recommendations moving forward. As for ELL, I think that I would be glad to talk to you specifically about Minneapolis and what could be done in Minneapolis in terms of a statewide response to ELL, providing additional support and technical assistance to school districts that are seeing increased students coming who are either new to country or need help with language. We want to be able as a state to provide that support. I think Minneapolis and St. Paul are separate things that need to be addressed separately because of the high concentrations of ELL population. I don't think that the resource, it's about resource, it's more about strategy and about what they're doing in those schools to support the students. And so we're hoping to be able to offer a little bit more technical assistance to those schools that are struggling the most. As you know, we did offer that assistance, and we have not been able to work directly with Minneapolis and St. Paul with our statewide system support. We're hoping that will change in the future and that we will be able to work with them a little bit more directly, because we know that it's working across the state. So I'm anxious to talk more about ELL. In terms of our vision for pre-K, I haven't been able to talk about universal pre-K because we're just now releasing the budget. So I hope as I talk about it more, you'll see the importance of how we're taking a comprehensive approach. It's difficult to put it all into one, because many of these dollars, like the CCAP program, come with federal dollars and federal guidelines around how those programs are administered. Head Start comes with federal dollars and federal program guidelines and evaluations and how those programs are administered. So pulling them all together in a state one pot, I think, would be difficult, but I do think that we could do things for school districts to make it more streamlined and to help them navigate through how to partner with their local Head Start, for instance, if they don't have the facility in order to offer a pre-K program, how to offer programs and work through the administration of CCAP funding. But when school districts are going to be provided this additional funding through pre-K, if you agree that that's a good strategy, many of our school districts already know how to do pre-K, and we built into the budget support for our teams to help school districts work through and build strong pre-K programs. As you know, school-based programs will have licensed pre-K teachers in them. So they come already with the pedagogical and instructional and content knowledge to be able to deliver and work with pre-K children, age 4, and already how to align to our K-12 standards. So we're hoping that the technical assistance that we give in pre-K in our public schools will be just like we do for kindergarten and building out kindergarten, or we do for first grade. So essentially we're saying, we recognize that the benefit is so great to students to have a preschool experience that we should offer it in our public schools as well as a first grade for students to come in.
Thank you. Senator Bono.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, thank you so much for being here today and presenting this very bold budget. I do appreciate it. As you know, one of the things I am most interested in are the early childhood scholarships. And so I don't think it's maybe clear around the table that really in doing your proposal this way, that you are actually doubling our investment in those scholarships by eliminating the path to scholarships. One of the things that, so I really appreciate that, because I would like to fill the need for the most at-risk families first. That, you know, would be my preference. One of the concerns we heard last year with regard to the scholarships was, number one, the difficulty of the application being complicated. Number two, the way that those Pathway 1 scholarships were going out was based on a formula around concentrations of poverty. But we know that, you know, there are people who are poor regardless of zip code. And so it's really important to make sure that we get it to, you know, as many people as possible. So could you just address your thoughts about, as we go forward, what is the strategy to get the, you know, now double that amount out?
Yeah, so thank you, Senator Bono and Chairwoman. So we are really excited to be able to offer our Pathway 1 scholarships and really expand those. Currently, we have reserved spots for schools, daycare centers who fill out an application, and Head Start. Because we're looking at eliminating the Head Start wait list, we're proposing in here to have pre-K in schools. We want those to then be transferred to the Pathway 1 and Parent Choice Scholarship. So essentially, it is almost a doubling of those Parent Choice Scholarships, which I think is good. It's also expanding 0 to 5. So they then can start earlier. Families can start earlier. It is targeted to our high poverty. Head Start is actually our greatest eligibility, and those are our poorest families. So I'm glad to hear you want to focus on our poorest kids first. That would be our Head Start kids who have been waiting on this waiting list. And then scholarship, and then CCAP. And so I think that in terms of the application, we've eased that, and we've changed our application. I think Bobby could probably speak to the application process better. If you'd like, Bobby, you want to come up and just speak quickly about how we've changed our application process. And then in terms of getting them out by concentration, our compensatory program works on concentration similarly. And as we went around the first time, we were thinking this is a way to be able to get them out fairly and serve more poor kids because there's just a higher concentration of poor kids. And then we also had to think about ramping up Parent Aware so there were enough providers in every region. Some of our regions don't have enough providers yet, so I'll let Bobby speak to where we're at with how the rollout has gone in terms of the equity of where they're at with the regions, too.
Thank you.
And if you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Hi, Bobby Burnham, Director of Early Learning Services, the Minnesota Department of Education. Thank you, Senator and Mr. Chair. Commissioner Casilius is correct. The rollout of Pathway 1s and Pathway 2s has been a learning curve for the department, and we are happy to say that we feel that we've been proactively addressing many of the challenges, one of those being the application process. And we feel with the elimination of Pathway 2s, which is where some of the challenges were really apparent for school districts who apply for Pathway 2s, we'll be eliminating by transitioning all to Pathway 1s. We've made considerable reductions in the application process for Pathway 1s as well, so the application is more concise, more streamlined. We're working to align it better with other program applications so it's not so, so it's easier for families to navigate. We feel the rollout and essentially doubling the scholarships with the additional money for Pathway 2s will be mostly the work of the regional administrators. The fact that Parent Aware is rolling out statewide as we speak will benefit as well. We also need to support the rollout of Parent Aware to help those programs that are struggling to become rated to be encouraged to be rated so they can take advantage of some of these incentive programs.
Follow up. Madam Chair, so I'm still not clear. I know. I'm just still not clear. So is there a formula by location around the state based on concentration still, or is that eased
up? That's how it's been done in the past.
And you're going to continue doing it that way?
Well, the difference will be the fact that Parent Aware is statewide, so there'll be more programs available. I think we are currently in all counties, so we will have to take a look at that, what that looks like for the years to come, to see what that availability looks like.
Thank you. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, one of the things I want to talk about is particularly in my area of the state where we have fight declining enrollments, is that really money for school facilities has not kept up with the needs of many of our districts. And is there any new money at all in this budget for school facilities?
In this first stab, Senator Weber, I'm sorry, Senator Johnson, there is not any new money in this budget at this time for facilities, but recognize that this is an important issue to the governor and to myself. We've put together the facilities work group recommendations and worked with a lot of stakeholder engagement around facilities. So this really deserves a big discussion and long-term planning. It's a hefty price tag, just like QCOMP and teacher workforce is a big price tag. And I think it's important for this body to consider those recommendations and to look what we could do long-term to address those needs. And I could have Tom speak to the facility task force recommendations briefly and where we're at with that. But in this current budget, there are no recommendations for that.
And members, and I think you know that there's a lot of concern about alternative facilities
yes.
funding. And Senator Ruger has put a lot of emphasis on
yes.
that. Senator Clausen, did you have a comment on that? We'll get you in the line. next, we have Senator Stone, and then Pat.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I'd be remiss if I wouldn't ask this question. And I'm just referring to the budget sheet, if you have that there. And if you could just give me a little explanation on item 43.
I'm not sure which budget sheet you're looking at, Senator.
43 is what I don't have.
It's the teacher development and evaluation.
Maybe Mr. Wilms could explain that to the committee.
It's like too far.
Item number 43 is.
Madam Chair and Senator Stumpf, Senator Stumpf's referring to the tracking spreadsheet produced by Senate Council. Item 43 is teacher development and evaluation. Funding in fiscal year 15, there was $9 million, and in fiscal 16, due to the aid payment schedule, there's $1
million. And Madam Chair, the question is what are we going to do to kind of help all the districts across the state? And I don't expect an answer, really, but I know it's of interest to all those districts out there that are going through the evaluative process in 2015.
Senator Johnson, Senator Stumpf, members, this has been a concern of mine since I took office, the inequity between the QComp districts and the non-QComp districts, and the fact that we passed a very extensive law in 2011, teacher evaluation, with zero funding to the department to in order to create that, and zero funding for school districts in order to implement it. There was a stopgap measure in the last legislative session to provide some relief to those non-QComp districts, but that was not ongoing funding. I believe that with our recommendations that are coming forward from our QComp task force, this deserves a lot of attention and discussion about the inequities that are caused by our lack of funding for teacher evaluation across from state to state. I'm just being very honest about that. It is a significant issue.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Senator Pratt and Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to be honest with my first reaction on this, and that is, I don't believe this budget proposal matches the needs of local school districts, the needs of Minnesota families. You know, you talked early on about from 2003 to present, school funding has lagged behind inflation. And yet a 1% increase in the basic formula really doesn't get us caught up. And I can tell you from my experience, that inequity goes back to the early 90s, where we haven't kept up with inflation. And you've got districts who, had the funding formula kept up with inflation, would be millions of dollars ahead. And yet what we seem to be doing is putting a lot of money towards new programs rather than taking care of the basic needs and the needs and the commitments that we've already made. 80 to 85% of a school district's budget is personnel cost. Those are rising at 2, 3% a year, and yet we're giving 1% on the formula. In the meantime, you know, we, as has been mentioned, we're not talking about any reform to facilities. So we've got kids going to school in buildings that are inadequate, with deferred maintenance that's being put off for years at a time. We're not taking on teacher evaluation. I think we've heard here that, you know, having a good teacher in the classroom is extremely important. And you know, just even in the private sector, having a good evaluative system is crucial to any employee, whether you're a teacher or a banker or a construction worker, to doing a good job. You mentioned teacher evaluation and facilities are big topics that we need to discuss, and yet, and that there was no money to fund either of these programs to the department or to local districts, and yet there's nothing in this proposal either that does that. So we seem to be kicking the can down the road a bit. And I guess I'd like your reaction to those thoughts, because it seems like we're passing on the things that we've already committed to, the real basic needs to fund a lot of these new programs. And then I'll just say, you know, even though we've got $109 million on this pre-K, you know, we've seen the price tag out in the tails is over a half a billion dollars. I think it was $580 million is what you showed us on the fiscal note. So even though we're, you know, it's nice to show a nice one-year biennial number, but we know that this is a much, this seems to underscore or I can't even think of the word, understates the real cost of the program. So I'll just leave that, leave those comments to you. But I guess the question is, why all the money to new programs and not taking care of the basic needs?
That's
and current
a good
commitments?
Question, Senator Pratt.
Senator Johnson, thank you, Senator Pratt. I think I could think of about 100 more ways that we could spend $1 billion in our schools. Having been in all many of our schools, hundreds of our schools over the past 4 years, and visiting communities and talking with them about their needs, I would have to disagree with you about what they're saying is what they need. When I go in and we're talking about achievement gaps, they say, but I'm not sure what to do with my American Indian kids. I've tried this, and I need help. If kids just started earlier, if they came to us ready, then we would have everything that we had. And as you can see from this budget, the biggest chunks are to the per pupil and to pre-K. So those are our biggest pieces. And I also know that these programs aren't new. These are proven programs that we've had in place. We are just expanding access. 200 more schools for regional centers that demonstrate an 85% improvement. We are expanding our support for EL kids because we know when they get the support, they do better. And the research says 7 years to master the English language. And then if we're expecting them to take concurrent enrollment and career pathway work, they're going to need to have that extra support to be able to do that. Kids, research shows kids do well on reading. This was a bipartisan effort in 2011 to have reading, every kid reading well by third grade. We are expanding our support with the Reading Corps in order to provide tutors to 14,000 more kids. There's 30,000 now, 14,000. We've seen results going from 24th in the nation in our reading to 10th in the nation. We've closed gaps with our reading effort. So I would like to share with you that I believe that what we have here is not new programming, but expanding on what we know works. Positive behavior systems, expanding to 600 more kids so that everybody learns well in the classroom, and kids who have difficulty with their behavior aren't being suspended and thrown out of school. They're actually being reengaged in the school community in a positive way. So even though we don't have a focus on the priorities like school buildings or teachers, we have a focus on vulnerable kids. And so we had to balance whether we fix our buildings this biennium or whether we give the supports to our vulnerable kids. And we erred on giving the support to our vulnerable kids. And that's where we're at.
I'm not going to recognize you, Senator Pratt, because we have some other questions. And I think it's really a rhetorical question. And I'm wondering if anybody knows if there has been an introduction in the Senate or the House for like a 3% increase on the formula.
Yes.
Is there one out there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I applaud the people that have done it. Good.
Senator Johnson.
Clausen.
Senator Johnson, can I get on your list? Because I had indicated
sure.
to Senator Wieger that I wanted to ask a question. And
I'm sorry, he didn't write your name down.
Did you get it?
Got it. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Commissioner, for presenting the budget today. I'm going to sound like Senator Pratt here a little bit, quite a bit, perhaps.
Senator Clausen.
In the
Senator Wieger gave me the instruction that at 9:45 we start with the academies, and 9:45 at the perfect center for the arts. Okay. So that's giving 10 more minutes than what the agenda.
I'll try to be brief, Madam Chair. Thank you. In the last 36 hours, I've had two conversations with two large suburban district superintendents. They both indicated with this proposal they will be cutting their budget. Focusing on early childhood, it's hard to disagree. I mean, we know the facts. We know the statistics. It's there. But we've also been amiss in looking at inflationary costs and other fixed costs that districts have, and I'm afraid that this budget proposal is going to be placing a lot of districts in a situation where they're going to be cutting.
I think another thing we need to realize that the students that we're supporting in the early childhood programs up through grade three are going to continue to need that support of secondary students. There's no question about that. If we're going to be successful in getting all students to graduate from high school, we need to concentrate on that. AVID programs, concurrent enrollment that you've mentioned, that requires funding. Project Lead the Way, it's about $75,000 to just implement the program through training and equipment. And so I think that we need to broaden our look at this. You mentioned compensatory funding. I know many districts are using compensatory funding right now to fund, I'll use Senator Hoffman's 4K programs already. You talked about the positive behavior interaction and support programs. I know that we've put more money into mental health for our schools, but at the same time, if we would address the program by having mental health professionals available in all districts, perhaps we wouldn't need that down the road. So I do have some concerns at the local level what the implications might be, and I think we'll be working through that as we continue here in the weeks ahead. But I just wanted to, you don't need to respond. I think you adequately did, but these are some of my thoughts, so thank you.
Senator Johnson, Senator Claassen, I just want to mention, as a former superintendent, I also would like a 3% increase. It's just very expensive, you know, and I think that it's just, you know, like the governor said, this is his first proposal to set his vision, and then he's depending on all of you for a rich discussion on where we end up on May 22nd.
And members, we will get a chance to vote on that bill. As Senator Wieger has said, he will have a hearing on, offer a hearing to anyone who has introduced a bill and has been referred to this committee. So we can look forward to that. Senator Wicklund, and then Senator Nenow, you had a question also.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is around another area that I don't see included in the changes in the budget, and that has to do with special education. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about the thought process there. I'm not only seeing a kind of a flat line there, but I see some red numbers, and I guess I'd like to understand what do those mean in terms of the years ahead. I mean, I think we all believe that that by increasing supports at the earlier ages, that we're hoping that will have an impact on future needs for special ed. But that is what I'm hearing from my districts is, you know, it's a huge impact. The cross subsidy right now is a huge impact on these districts. And it's another drain and impact on the general fund. And that's, you know, I concerning to me that we don't see any or attempt to address that here.
Commissioner.
Senator Johnson, Senator Wicklund, we have some inflationary increases built into the special ed fix that we did back in 2013, and Tom can speak to that. We've also seen some declines in special education in our pre-K, so that might be what you're seeing there. You probably heard the governor yesterday talking about this is one of the areas that also he's very committed to, and that it's not reflected here in this budget because we have some increases. So I'll let Tom speak to how the inflationary works with our per pupil funding reform that we did in 2013.
Mr. Melcher.
Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, the legislation that was enacted in 2013 does increase special education funding by $40 million for the current biennium, and then that increase continues in this upcoming biennium. And unlike the general education formula, the special education formula does include a 4% increase per year built into current law. So special education funding does automatically increase at a rate that's fairly similar to the actual rate of growth in special education costs. There is a small negative adjustment to special education in this budget that is the result of the general education formula increase, because the special education formula, excess cost formula, in part depends on what the excess cost of special education is. That's calculated by looking at partly the cost of special education, but also the amount of general education dollars that are used for special education students. There is kind of an automatic negative on the special ed side whenever you increase the general education formula. So that's not really a cut in special education. It's reflecting that part of that 1% increase goes for special education students.
Members, I'd like to just comment very briefly that I was at a legislative, and Senator Hoffman was there too, at Anoka Hennepin School District, and they were giving us a report on the what's happening in their district, and they had one statement, and I have the brochure in my office, and I know I can even find it, and where they said their special ed numbers were decreasing, and I asked the question why. And their response, among other things, was that their early interventions are making a difference. And, you know, Anoka Hennepin has been providing that four-year-old at their school. So it's what we all hope for. I mean, you feed kids breakfast, you get them take care of their dyslexia, their ADHD, and their vision. maybe we'll see a reduction in those very, very high expenditures that we have with taking care of the needy children. Commissioner.
Senator Johnson and Senator Wicklund as well, we have a program that allows school districts to use a portion of their special ed funding it through a program called ADSES, Alternative Delivery of Instruction Special Ed Services, and they get approved by the department in order to do problem solving and early interventions with students just so that they can bring down some of that special ed identification as well.
Keep in mind my non-academic barriers to learning.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize in advance. I think I'm going to be piling on a little bit with Senator Pratt, but I really do appreciate, Commissioner, that the need for prioritization. I understand that you can only spend a dollar one time, and there's only so many dollars to spend. But when I look at this, and I'm looking at the spreadsheet from Senate Fiscal. When I look at this and I put these numbers in context of the prioritization commentary that you gave us, it doesn't feel real. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, the 1% and 1%, about $173 million. The general education program subtotal, this is a difference, the governor's recommendation difference, about $290 million. By burying universal pre-K out in the tails, just that alone is more than everything increased here in the gen ed. Just that one item alone, $377 million buried in the tails. Now, if that becomes reality, we already have prioritized the next budget. So I hope we see something a little more finessed than this when we get a final product.
Thank you, Senator Nienau. And this is a project in moving on to modifying what the governor says possibly and changing it. He has said that many, many times when he puts forward his proposals. We can look at that. No further questions. 944. Senator Pratt, if you can do it in 30 seconds. Question?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I think
I want to hear it.
I guess my comment was around the vulnerable kids, and I think we all want to make sure that our students are successful in the classroom, but we also want to make sure that they have great teachers in front of them, that they have stable and reliable funding, and that we're keeping our communities involved. And so I do take I am taken aback by the response that, you know, we're focusing on vulnerable kids and how dare you talk about funding school boards and funding facilities. And I think we want all students to be successful. And so that would be my comment, is it's not about trying to make poor kids less important. It's about trying to take care, you know, what we think are the priorities. And what are the commitments we've already made versus adding a lot of new investment into programs that while we kick legislative commitments down the down the road. So that was my only comment.
Commissioner, one last word.
Senator Johnson, Senator Pratt, thank you. I really wasn't meaning to say how dare you. It was more of my passion around vulnerable kids. The other things that you mentioned are just as important, and I just want you to know that that was not my intent. And just two more things, Senator Nino, the reason that we have the tails listed there is being transparent about how we're expecting to scale the program to get to where we can be 1.0 to what was the original proposal. It will take several years for us to scale up into preschool. It's not that we're trying to hide anything by having 109. We recognize we're just getting our foot in the door here to expand the choice for parents to be able to go to their public school and have that be an option for parents. And then finally, just for your information, currently there's reauthorization happening at the federal level around ESEA, and there's a lot of talk, Senator Wicklund, about fully funding special education. I know that Chairman Klein has said that this is a priority of his, and I think they're introducing a bill next week to fully fund special education. So hopefully they will do their part with funding the 40% that they promised, and that will help us out as well. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Commissioner, and appreciate your answering all the questions. So now we will go on to whoever you choose to bring up.
I know. It's a little something. She's excited. Oh, they did the words.
Welcome to the committee. There's a little bit of a transition here. Please identify yourself and
I agree with that personally.
Purpose School.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sue Mackert. I'm delighted to be here today to talk about one of my favorite subjects, the Purpose Center for Arts Education, where I serve as executive director. With me is our board chair, Mr. Pierce McNally, an attorney with Gray Plant Moody, among other things, and Dr. Carla Hines, who serves as the Purpose Center Senior Director of Education Effectiveness. I wanted to just give you a little brief history about the Purpose Center, and then we'll talk about money briefly. I expect that we will be back here at some point, but just wanted to have a little synopsis today to share with you. 30 years ago, legislators made a very bold decision by creating a state agency focused on arts education as a means to impact student achievement, contribute to the state's economic development, and position Minnesota students for global competition. That was the intent. 3 decades later, I can say with great confidence, and backed up by research, that the investment made has resulted in a great return for the citizens of Minnesota. Now, many of you think of the Purpose Center as just a school, that magnificent arts high school. But from the onset, our responsibilities were not limited to operating a school. In fact, the first 5 years of the Purpose Center's existence were devoted to conducting research and providing impeccable professional development opportunities for K-12 teachers and teaching artists. We write books, we develop curriculum, we foster ongoing innovation and change. This was really important because that's how we speak to changes in schools and their demographics. We prepare state and national standards in the arts, and we write state policies. We help the College Board design an AP course in art history. We serve as a resource for other state governments right now who are looking at how to capitalize in their states on the creative industry. And we work to keep our mascot, thank you, Mayor Harris, the Canada Goose in our Golden Valley Pond. We provide consistent leadership in helping school districts attack those systemic issues affecting teacher and student achievement, which has resulted in requests in each of the last 3 years from 85% of Minnesota school districts saying, we want more help and more involvement of the Purpose Center in our school districts. We operate the only statewide public lending library with resources for arts education, pedagogical use, multicultural and diversity programs, and professional development. Since 1991, about 3,300 students have graduated from the arts high school, and I'm very proud to state that in the past 4 years, we have consistently achieved 100% graduation, with 90% of the students going on to college from high school. Crosswinds Arts and Science School is a good example of our ability to identify and address the achievement gap. In a school where achievement was not satisfactory among children of color, who represent 60% of the student body, we focused this last year on academic programs and used the arts to reach and engage these students. This past semester, I'm very proud to say that 110 of 193 students earned a 3.0 grade point average. We are also collaborating with institutions of higher education to teach and train teachers at Crosswinds, and Dr. Hines will talk a tiny bit about that. We've been honored with numerous national awards for our heritage of excellence in arts education, and most recently, we're very proud to be selected to spearhead the Turnaround Schools Initiative of the President's Committee on the Arts and the Humanities. We're providing intensive work in four schools in Minnesota that have perennially been in the bottom 5% of schools on student achievement. We will help turn them around because we are taking a holistic approach, looking at family, health, community, and all those issues that affect learning. These brief illustrations exemplify why Purpose Center for Arts Education has been worth the investment and why we ask for your continued support. Since 2011, our revenues have decreased while labor and operational costs have risen and demand for services has reached an all-time high. At the same time, we share the same struggles school districts have in being able to properly fund an innovative high school. We do not receive state reimbursement for special education, and where once biology, health, and physical education were solid 9th and 10th grade subjects in schools, it is no longer the case. So we have students entering the arts high school, which is for 11th and 12th graders, unprepared to graduate. We are a lean operation, and we embrace continuous improvement as a means to keep costs low while still supporting quality programming. However, without additional consideration, we will need to eliminate programs at the arts high and or continue cuts in our statewide outreach services. But keep in mind, this is happening to your flagship arts education agency while other states are beginning to invest very heavily in arts education. They see the benefits not only in student achievement, but they're preparing for the creative economy. So let's talk money. Yesterday, we learned of and agree with the governor's recommendation of maintaining our general fund and providing $1 million over the biennium for facility instructional improvements and increasing the base compensation by 1.8%. Additionally, however, we need funds for technology and hope to come back here and talk to you about that. We need about $1,080,000 over the biennium to take care of our technology needs. This figure was provided by Minute 2 years ago after extensive analysis of our systems and needs. Technology for us is not a luxury. It is a tool and a necessity. Unlike school districts, we cannot levy for technology, making us absolutely woefully behind and wreaking havoc in our ability to deliver education in the state. We also seek $1 million across the biennium to support operations and outreach work needed for our rural school districts. We do want to help every district across the state, and we had devised a program a number of years ago to provide for local decision making through our partner schools. We think that that's absolutely critical, particularly as school districts around the state are experiencing experiential growth in a number of different demographics that they aren't used to, and we can use the arts to help them reach those students, but they're different. What's happening in southeastern Minnesota is different than what's happening in northeastern or northwestern Minnesota. We think this level of investment for us is very pragmatic and will provide great academic returns as our proven programs really allow the state to directly address the pernicious effects of the achievement gap, and I mean at all levels, at the top level and the bottom levels and everything in between. By training teachers in cultural competence and the use of arts education to motivate and engage students. Pripet Center is very deeply woven into the fabric of Minnesota education. We'd like to stay that way. We look forward to doing our part in continuing to be of service. And just again as a reminder, we don't have a PowerPoint, but what I would like you to see is where we're located. We're in every one of your communities with projects, and these two little boards kind of show, and I'll take them down afterward, but this is where students from the Arts High School come from. And this is where professional development and outreach. So we're serving the rural communities, and there's nothing more humbling than us getting a grant application.
We need to have you speaking into the microphone so that it can be recorded, but appreciate the information. Maybe you could just pull the microphone up if you choose to.
My point in showing you these two graphs that are better than a PowerPoint of our wonderful entertaining students is that we serve the whole state, and we do set very ambitious goals for ourselves because we recognize that all districts need service, and when we deal with the 85% who want more, we understand it. We're prepared, we're ready to continue service, but we know that the needs are growing. So with that, I would like to ask Dr. Carla Hines to say a few things on her end of our educational program. And
for my Ms. Meckert, for my own information, can you tell me how many students you have at the school?
At the Arts High School?
Yes.
We have about two.
All over the state of Minnesota, of course.
From all over the state, we have about 250. We have had to limit in some areas because of lack of technology and lack of facility. By law, for your information, we can take 310. We don't take everyone who has applied.
Senator Torres-Frey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it would be very beneficial for us to, as we have these maps, which are very good, gives us a picture of where the kids are. I would like to request that we get your budget in terms of the kids. So in the handout that you brought us, you put the total biennial budget of $16.2 million. But I'm having a hard time trying to find out. You know, you do have all of these charts about where you use your money, but I am particularly interested, you know, If you have 250 kids in the school, of course, this is not the total of your programming. I am interested in tracking kind of what the $16 million actually buys in terms of college graduation. I am very, I have a kid who is very artistic, and he just thrives in these environments. He just loves it, and he's in Portland right now, and this is the ceramics and photography and all of these pieces are the only things he wants to do. He doesn't want to take any of the other classes. And I struggle with him because, you know, obviously he's in college now and his preparation has to be, you know, complete. So I'm just curious about how do we support the kids that are so ready to pursue this kind of education, what kind of incentives we have to provide, how are they getting into college, where are they going, what kind of preparation they get, and whether or not they really get the skills to go to college, they apply for college, they get accepted because of the emphasis. In my opinion, my son is there because of the emphasis that the high school got. He went to South, put into his skill, and he just stayed in school and graduated. So I'm very interested in those indicators of what do we buy with $16 million for, I don't know how many kids, but I only have the 250 that graduated, that are in the school, and I don't know if they all graduated or not and where they went.
Ms. Meckert, if you'd like to respond, or if anyone else likes to, that you would have them respond.
Madam Chair, I'm so very, very pleased, Senator Torres-Ray, to respond to that question. And first of all, I have to explain that it's not just the school, that the funds go to the statewide professional development services. What's different about the Arts High School, and we have extreme success with all of our students, and we put a little taste of some of their careers in your handout. We recently had 175 alums on campus, and they're all gainfully employed because in the arts, it is career-based. It is career-based in everything we do. And that's part of the difference with the Arts High School compared to some other schools. Yesterday, a parent called me because her son, a music lover, graduated from not our school, graduated from a school, and she said, I tell people, don't let your children go into music because they're not going to make a living. And she said, and your school is different. And it's because we do teach that it's not that they're all going to become working artists. Some do, and they do extremely well. But it's a matter of taking those skills, the creativity, the ability to strategically solve problems, and direct those into careers. So colleges, we can't keep up with the number of colleges that come to our school. So we hold our own college fair now because they want our students. They know our students are passionate about learning, about creativity, and that they understand discipline. And that's part of the difference in how this school relates in comparison to other schools. It's really critical. And the careers that our students have are phenomenal. But we do teach. We teach business in our music program. We teach all our visual arts students, for example, have to prepare and present a grant, and we bring in outside organizations that approve grants. They have to present to those groups in order to learn how to write and prepare a grant. So we're very career-oriented and always have been with those creative fields. It's wonderful to be ahead of that in Minnesota right now.
And members and Senator Kent, I know you raised your hand with a question, but I think maybe we'll keep with the pattern that Senator Wieger had and allow the testifiers to put forward their information, and then we'll start questions. So if you want to go on with whoever you'd like to speak. Dr. Hines, I believe you mentioned.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Hines. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just here to just give you an overall perspective as to how PerpEdge provides professional development to teachers throughout the state, not just our art specialists, but also our generalists in the field. Senator Torres-Ray asked, you know, what are some of the skills that the students are learning at the high school that they take on off to college? And that's one thing that we do in the area of professional development. We go out and we work with our art teachers so that they can help students articulate those 21st century skills that they're learning, because they become applicable in their core academic classes. So we also have professional development workshops with our general teachers as well, so that they can begin to teach through the arts as well. It is what we have learned over the years is that when students are engaged in the arts, learning becomes real. So when the general teachers can allow students to use their creative side, their innovative brain, and applying those contextual content skills that they're learning within their content area, students become more successful academically. So one thing that a lot of my educational specialists have been doing, they have been going out to districts and working with the directors of curriculum and instructions in order to help them understand how the standards and the 21st century skills are embedded into the art standards and how they can align with the other courses that students are taking in their schools. So they're doing alignment of art offerings. But one thing that we have been noticing and experiencing and hearing throughout the state is arts are being cut. And it's due to budget constraints. But we feel that arts education is very important. So what we try to do is we build our art teachers up with the knowledge that they need to have in order to advocate for arts education within their districts.
Thank you, Dr. Hines. Mr. McNally.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It seems to me that the brass tacks question is, what can we do for you? And it seems to me that there are really three areas in which we can assist in amplifying the dollars that you spend to get an exponential return as opposed to an arithmetic return on your educational expenditures. First and foremost, I think we are dedicated to and we will continue to provide a 100% graduation rate. And I think this is of high importance to us at Purpich. It's a value that we are going to continue to promote and we are going to continue to support, because without our students getting out of Purpich and into either productive life or additional study, we're not going to be able to assist you in developing that world-class workforce that Minnesota needs. Secondly, the changing demographics of the state are going to require that the achievement gap be erased. Without an erasure of the achievement gap in the state of Minnesota, we cannot provide a world-class workforce to the employers that are going to be seeking talent from all over the world. We were recently selected by the President's Committee on Arts and Humanities specifically to address that issue. And based on a large body of research that is currently being expanded by the President's Committee and other respected institutions, it's clear that there is no magic bullet for solving the achievement gap. And one of the things we need to do, I think, in the state of Minnesota is to give ourselves a diversity of ways to address it, because of the high importance that it has given the changing demographics of our state and the workforce of the future. It's clear that preliminary indications are that an arts-infused curriculum goes a long way to assisting in diminishing the achievement gap, and that the achievement gap needs to be approached in a variety of ways if it is truly going to be solved and it is truly going to be erased, as it must be, to develop the workforce that we need for the future. You've all read, I'm sure, the studies that indicate that more and more of the workforce of the 21st century is going to be coming from what they call the creative class. Purpich is the pipeline of the creative class in the state of Minnesota. And we are going to continue to provide not only doctors and lawyers and surgeons, but people that are going to be involved in graphic design, are going to be involved in theater arts, are going to be involved in a whole variety of quality of life aspects that are very important when it comes to attracting
world-class talent and maintaining their residency in Minnesota. And finally, I think one of the things that helps amplify the efficacy of the dollars that you spend on the Perpich Center is that it's not in deference to what Senator Pratt was talking about when Commissioner Casilius was here. We were selected as one of 10 schools internationally to participate in an art science initiative that tends that tries to meld art and science for purposes of addressing problems of topical concern. And only three of those schools were in the United States, and Perpich was selected as one of them. So one of the things that that we try to do is to provide that kind of holistic approach that is going to allow people one of the aspects of education that is going to be more and more critically important as the 21st century evolves, and that is collaboration. And collaboration between artists and scientists, and between technologists and people from all different walks of life are the ways in which it's going to be possible to solve many of these problems. And I would submit that based on our experience and based on our record, that an investment in Perpich is an excellent way to amplify and exponentially create more value from the dollars that are very precious and are very scarce. And with that, I thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Kent, we'll start with you if anyone else has questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know we've gone long here, so I'll try to be brief. Senator Torres-Ray sort of outlined some of the questions I had, but I just sort of wanted to reaffirm and add a little more detail to it. I think she made a specific request for follow-up information, and I kind of want to do the same thing from what Ms. Mackert said and what Mr. McNally was just describing. For example, in higher education, we had a really great presentation from the U, which, like you, has a variety of missions. And I think there's a way to sort of aggregate and synthesize some of the budget and spending information that better align with the different missions so that we can see, okay, within the arts high school, this is what we're looking at. Within the professional development piece, this is what's happening. And so if I could also just add to that request to pull it all together and package it in a way that breaks it down more closely aligned with the different components of your mission. And I would add a second part to this. You gave us the taste about the professional success of your students, and that leaves us hungry for more. I would like to get some more information and some more detail about and I know it's hard to track everybody after a certain amount of time, but just a sense of are they contributing to Minnesota's workforce? What are they doing? Because you're right, we are all hands on deck making sure that we have the workforce that we need for the future, and so we'd love to hear more about how Perpich is contributing to that.
Members, you do have a brochure from the Perpich School Center for Arts, and they do have a list of some of their graduates and what they're doing, and that's cool. And I noticed there's even one from 2008, so that's it's 4 years of college.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to echo a few of the comments that have been made here, we've seen in our schools as testing has taken more of a predominant role, we've seen many of the elective areas have been cut back. And I'd be interested in based on some of your comments when we come back to get a report, that in what ways has your mission been compromised through looking at the achievement gap and how to address that, but at the same time have that balance. So I'd be curious in that. I know in particular at the Crosswinds we made some allocations in the past, and I know that perhaps you haven't reached some of the goals in that area about enrollments and so on. So I'd like to get more information in that area as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Torres-Ray, very briefly, because we'll go until 10:30, but we need to hear from the academies.
Madam Chair, this is not a question for the testifiers, but I wanted to suggest to perhaps the chair and Ms. Livingston, who is our committee administrator, I think that as you hear the questions of the members, I think it would be very helpful for us to request that the people who come and present give us a sense of the use of the funding and the projections for the request. Because when we have a document that is like this that says, this is the money we get, we already know that, and we're using it you know, or whatever. Well, we already know that. And then you come and tell us, you know, how these great things kind of work. We kind of know a little bit of it, and we appreciate that. But I'm more interested in really figuring out how the dollars are being used. Clearly, everybody's talking about achievement gaps, so we're going to have some demographic breakdowns as to really what, how do we use the funding, and is that if the request is to enhance that revenue, what is that they are not getting right now, and what they plan to do? So I think that the questions are always like that. So it seems like our testifiers and the people who are invited to present are just not bringing what we really want. So it's kind of hard to put them on the spot right there to say, give me that information.
I would say that, you know, to remind us that these are kind of overviews right now, and that we will be taking up the financial figures and the discussions about how the money is being used and so forth. So, you know, no criticism of the presenters today because they were asked to give us an overview. Appreciate that. But that is a very, very responsible request for you to ask of the chair and the staff to ask for those bits of information and make them available to the committee members. If there are no other questions, we appreciate your discussion. I'm sorry. I hope I haven't missed anyone that said they wanted a question. If not, thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing you again here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We look forward to coming back.
Thank you. So now we have the State Academies and Mr. Brad Harper, Superintendent. Yeah. Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Brad Harper. I'm the superintendent of the State Academies in Faribault. It's never a good position to present when you're over time. And so I realize that we're over our scheduled time, and so I'll try to adjust my comments accordingly. First thing I want to share with you is that you should have a one-page handout that describes a little bit about the academies. And I want to go over a couple of parts in that one-pager. But also I want you to change your thinking a bit. You listened to Commissioner Casilius's excellent presentation from the Department of Education. You listened to Sue Mackert's presentation about Purpich Academy for the Arts. Excellent, excellent presentations. The state academies are different. They're flat out different, and the reason that they're different is for a couple of reasons. But the primary reason is that we are a special education site. We're not a general education site. We are a special education site. We do not receive the general ed funding formulas that Commissioner talked about. We also do not receive the special education funding formulas that Mr. Melcher talked about. So we're an aberration in terms of our funding model. That's critical to understand. The other part is we're a state agency, and the state agency model is overlaid on us as an educational entity. That creates problems for us in terms of operations because we are a school district, number 160. We are two schools, State Academy for the Deaf, State Academy for the Blind, but we also are overlaid with the state agency model. And that is essentially a business model which does not align very well with school districts. So we're an aberration. Change your thinking a bit, and it will help you understand where we're coming from. So having said that, I want to extend an invitation to you. Come down and see us. We have two campuses. They're a half mile apart. We're 60 minutes from this office, and you're very welcome to come down there. It's an excellent, excellent place. As I said earlier, I'm the superintendent at the academies. I'm 2.5 years into my tenure there. I'm a rookie at this. I don't understand a lot of the legislative process. I don't understand a lot of the state models of things, and so I will make some inaccurate statements as I refer to things. But nonetheless, it's a great organization. We provide a tremendous service to the state, and it is phenomenal to work there.
Mr. Harper, I want to let you know that there are a good number of people around here who are in their 2.5 year stint to win a new job. So we understand.
Thank you for the advice or the perspective. I talked about who we are. I talked about us as being a special education site. One of the things that the commissioner talked about is access from the department, support from the department. We don't get it. They talked about the regional centers of excellence. We have one an hour away in Rochester. Wonderful people there. And one of the first things I asked when I started is, can we connect? Can we work with you? You're going to offer us some support in terms of curriculum development, in terms of staff development. And the answer was, sorry, you're not a Title I school. You don't qualify.
Whoa.
Okay, what about QCOMP? Doesn't apply. Oh. What about world's best workforce? Make sure you do the reports, make sure you make that, but there's no dollars to come along with that that other districts may receive. So we basically have one source of income, one source of revenue. That's our general allocation. Last year, or this year, it's $11.9 million. Do the math. How many kids do you have? 175. Oh, God, that seems extremely expensive. So what are your comparables? The best comparables we can come up with are the intermediate school districts that surround the metro area. 916 up in the White Bear Lake northeast area, 287 on the west and southern area, and then Dakota or then 917 in the Dakota County area. Those are the intermediate districts that deal with high demand kids that districts cannot typically serve adequately within their boundaries. So they contract or they work with the intermediate districts. So when you look at the cost for those high demand kids and you look at a full day program, how do we compare to those costs? Because that's fairly comparable. That's apples to apples. So we talked with the MDE, asked for some information, and they sent us 492 invoices from those three intermediate districts. Their average cost is $64,832 per kid, student rather. Ours is $68,857. Got a $4,000 difference. We have residential programming. They don't. So the cost per student, when you do that really rough mathematical analysis, is that we're not excessive in terms of cost. We provide a unique service to residents in the state of Minnesota that have a significant loss in vision, significant loss in hearing, and or who may be multi-challenged. We save districts thousands of dollars with our support for multi-challenged kids that are cognitively delayed, in wheelchairs, need medical support. We provide that within our regular allocation. And so that's part of the services that we provide. We also get some asset preservation money, and we get some reimbursements for our one-on-one professional or paraprofessionals, classroom assistants, for the students. The cost for districts is zero. I say that again. The cost to the districts in the state of Minnesota, it's zero. Two exceptions. One is transportation. They got to get the kids down and get them home. And the one-on-one paraprofessionals or classroom assistants. They compensate those salaries. Not the benefits, the salaries. So we're financially responsible, I think, and we provide an excellent, excellent service. I do want to talk about something that Senator Jensen mentioned, Senator Pratt mentioned, and other members of the committee have mentioned, technology. We worked with Minute, Purpose Center of the Arts, and to put forth a technology proposal, a combined technology proposal for both Purpose Center for the Arts and the academies. That was at Minute's suggestion. We put together a combined proposal that they were going to take forward to the legislature this season. That plan was going forward until Halloween. Then we got a phone call that said, change of plan. You guys are on your own. Purpose is on your own. Oh, why? We never got a clear answer for that, but we're on our own. So we took that our plan forward, all the documentation that was requested, required, and we shared that with our executive budget officer. It went to the governor's office. It turned out to be about a $3 million request to upgrade our technology over 4 years. And then yesterday was the punch in the stomach. It's not in the budget. It's not in the recommendation. Mm-hmm. We're hurting. Our computers and our network system goes down on a regular basis. Our computers are average 6 years, between 5 and 7 years old. Okay, that's not horrible, but the processing speed, the memory capacity is questionable, but our biggest deficit area in technology is our capacity to handle video. We can't. It just overwhelms the system and we shut down. We need some support, help in that area. And I'm not sure how we're going to work on that, but that's our huge, huge need. So with that, I'd like to answer questions, respond to your concerns, and go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Harper, for sharing those concerns. Questions, Senator Jensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just Superintendent Harper, it's good to see you.
Likewise.
We've had some success in getting some of the needs met.
We've had
in the
a
past.
Tremendous amount of success working with the legislature.
Okay.
We have a safer environment on campus. We have put up some barriers across highways to slow trucks and traffic down near the School for the Blind. We've increased safety. We have support for a new dormitory, and construction on that is moving forward. So we've had a lot of successes and a lot of support.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry.
You should come and talk to me about mm-hmm. the issue you just talked about, the technology need and some of that, and we'll have a conversation.
Sure.
Here.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Senator Jensen, just for our tape, I think you said you guys should talk, right?
That is correct. We should get together and have a conversation about the topic of technology and what mm-hmm. we can do.
Okay. And we'll presume that'll be followed on?
Most definitely, yes.
Okay. Further questions, comments of Superintendent Harper?
Yes.
I'm asking members, or is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the Academy's presentation? And again, there will be a further opportunity in the future. So thank you very much, Superintendent Harper.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share some information about the Academies. Again, we're an hour away. Stop down.
Thank you. And members, we will meet tomorrow, and we have two bills before us, Senate File 343, physical education. That's Senator Kent. I believe we're going to have some good presentation from some groups on that. And also Senate File 145, technology devices, Senator Schmidt. And that's what we have for the balance of this week. Next week, tentatively, we're meeting Tuesday. We're still getting back to authors, but Senate File 96, Senator Kiffmeyer, Senate File 133, Dahl, and Senate File 217, Weber, proposals. And so we're trying to accommodate everyone that has made a request, and that's what we have at this point for next week. I did have a chance to meet with Representative Erickson in the House yesterday or day before, and we are looking at an upcoming joint meeting, and the subject for the joint meeting, and which would be either February 10 or 12, and we probably would start at 8:15 over in the House. I assume that's okay, but we're looking at receiving the report from the Department on testing.
student testing. It's one of the seven key goals, and there's been a task force addressing this, and we thought we would jointly hear that, as well as a report that has recently been gone online from the department regarding QCOMP and teacher development evaluation dollars. So we're going to have a joint meeting. I also, we will extend invitation for Representative Loon's committee. They have a separate policy finance, some member overlap, but we are working together to at least jointly receive those and have some Q&A amongst us. There being no further business, we again thank everyone for their participation. We're now adjourned.